Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2016, and this is the Fourth State Drive Time, coming to you live from I-40. This is your host, Marty Duran, and it's good to be with you. The Fourth State is brought to you by Jord at woodwatches.com, unique, unforgettable, 100% wood watches. Check them out at woodwatches.com and use the coupon code T4EPODCAST to save yourself 10% on any purchase of a Jord watch at woodwatches.com. Big news this morning that everybody's going to be talking about. 8 o'clock local time, 7 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time. Multiple bombs exploded in Brussels, Belgium. Two apparently at the major airport there, and then about an hour later, one at a subway station not far from the center of town or from the airport area. I'm not sure on the locale. CNN is reporting on their breaking headline banner. 23 now are accounted as dead. One of the bombs, according to another headline banner, was a suicide bomber. I think that one was in the airport. Dozens have been injured. This comes 4 days, according to the BBC, 4 days after the arrest of Salah Abdeslam, who was a suspect in the Paris attacks. News I read, I think it was yesterday, focused on Belgium as one of the problem areas for European-based terrorism, and this is certainly not going to do anything to quell those concerns. Bloomberg says that two at the airport, one at the subway station, and local news agencies in Belgium have reported that there were other bombs that either were found before detonation or that did not detonate. I do not know for sure. Belgian news also reported that gunshots were fired, and some people were reporting shouting or yelling in Arabic before the bombs exploded. So that'll be headline news, no pun intended and no promo for CNN intended, all day long. So more will come out about that. Is it ISIS related? Is it some other European extremist group related? Is it somebody in the middle of things related? This seems like a Paris attack, which would point to the more radical elements of Islam and ISIS style or Al-Qaeda style group. But we'll wait for Belgium to be sure. So that is the big news, and that's what a lot of people will be talking about this morning. Other news that fewer people will be talking about this morning. Over the last couple of days, there has been the traditional pilgrimage of United States presidential candidates to AIPAC. AIPAC is the America-Israel Political Action Committee and has been around for many, many years, the purpose of which is to foster a good working relationship and to keep a good working relationship between the governments of the United States and Israel. And traditionally, presidential candidates will make their trek to AIPAC. In some instances, they have videoed into the conference if they had a differing schedule, to talk to influential supporters of Israel, most of whom are American Jews, and this has been that way for decades. The AIPAC is nothing new. So Donald Trump has made his appearance, Hillary Clinton has made her appearance, and I guess by AIPAC standards, they both acquitted themselves well. Bernie Sanders was invited but unable to attend, and he, being unable to attend, asked if he could video his speech in, and it was declined, which all kind of subtext there, as he being the only Jewish candidate in the race, neither would make the time to go to AIPAC from his schedule. Now, in fairness, he is on the West Coast, and this meeting was on the East Coast, so it would have been a cross-country journey for a very short speech in front of the gatherees. So he asked if he could video in, which apparently has been allowed in the past, and he was told no. So the Jewish candidate wouldn't break his campaign schedule to go be a part of AIPAC, and AIPAC would not honor the Jewish candidate's request to appear via video. So what Bernie Sanders did while he was campaigning in Utah is he gave the speech that he would have given had he been allowed to speak at the AIPAC meeting. And so this was picked up by Haaretz. It was also picked up by Vice News and others. There's a couple of links in the episode notes for this podcast. I have to admire Sanders on this because it's very easy to go to AIPAC and do nothing short of pander for votes. AIPAC is very influential. They also are quite adept at fundraising and have been for many, many years. So it'd be quite easy to go there and pander, but Sanders in his speech, and truth be told, this may be why he didn't bother to come back, because he knew that his speech would not be as well received as some others might be, pulled really no punches, and he voiced his support for Israel and their right to existence and self-determination, and he also voiced his support for the Palestinian people and their right to self-determination. And I was not able to find the full text of the speech, but both of those links will provide you some good excerpts from the speech that he gave in Utah yesterday. He called Netanyahu to task for not dispersing tax money and for allowing the continued building of settlements in the West Bank especially, and he called Abbas, the leader of the Palestinian Authority, to task for not doing more to put down the activity of Hamas especially in these last couple of years. So it's a very balanced speech. He does advocate for a two-party solution in the Middle East where the Palestinian Authority would have legitimate authority, not authority under occupation of Gaza and the West Bank, and that Israel would have a right to exist unencumbered as a nation, as would the Palestinians. So worth checking out Sanders' statements on that. It is one of the most in-depth foreign policy speeches that he's given since he has been running. If you've been keeping up, you know he really is more focused on the American economy and things like that, and that has been the linchpin of his entire race. So different stuff coming out of Bernie Sanders' speaking engagement yesterday. Returning really quickly to the possibility of a brokered convention for the GOP if Trump does not get the necessary delegates before the convention takes place. And I don't know why I said delegate instead of delegate, but I did. So, anyway, Jim Glover sent me a message yesterday. He had found some research after hearing my thoughts on the brokered convention. And the rules of a brokered convention are complex because there are not only the rules about the convention itself. Each state also has rules about what its delegates can do during a brokered convention. So delegates from Alabama don't necessarily have the same rules as delegates from West Virginia, as delegates from California and Hawaii and New Mexico and etc. So each state's rules for its delegates can be separate from the rules that govern the meeting itself. So for instance, according to an article on CNN that deals with seven things to look for if it becomes a brokered convention, California's delegates can't unbind themselves until after a second vote. I think it's on the third vote that they can unbind themselves from their previous pledge and then vote as they will, whereas other states that might have earlier options to vote differently, their delegates be freed up or unbound, in other words, those delegates have, some of them have conflicting ideas about who they should continue to vote for since they have been sent to the convention to represent, for instance, Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. And so just because a delegate can become unbound doesn't mean that they would change their vote, even if their candidate began to falter, or if somebody like a Mitt Romney or another unannounced candidate were to enter the room and throw his or her hat into the ring. There are just so many different options, and it's a pretty thorough article. There's also one at ABC News, if you can track that one down, that deals with what does a brokered convention look like if you're interested in that kind of thing. The CNN article is pretty good. Thanks again for listening. I want to ask if you would be so kind to go to iTunes and rate and review the Fourth Estate podcast. That would be very helpful. Thank you to those who have done that already. It really doesn't take long to do it. If you have iTunes open, you should have the opportunity to do that even as you are listening to the podcast. And a review and a rating are helpful in search results, and it lends social proof and credibility to the podcast. So if you could do that, that would be awesome. I want to recommend to you my buddy Todd Littleton and his podcast, Pathological, and my friends Ryan and Philip. That's Ryan Abernathy and Philip Larson, and their podcast, Ryan and Philip's Conversation Rules, also linked from this week's episode notes so that you can find them with ease. Appreciate if you would give them a shout or give them a listen. And recommend the Fourth Estate to your friends and coworkers and family and people you like and don't like. And that would be very much appreciated as well. If you'd like to advertise, let me know. Send an email to marty@roundtablemediagroup.com. The Fourth Estate podcast is affiliated with and a production of Roundtable Media Group. Brought to you this month by Jord at woodwatches.com. Unique, unforgettable, 100% wood watches. Jord, woodwatches.com. Please use the coupon code T4EPODCAST. And save yourself 10% on any watch at woodwatches.com. And until the next time, this is Marty Duren with Fourth Estate Drive Time. I hope you have a fantastic day.